Classic shit. Timeless. Forever. Iconic.
DJ Khaled.
A divine leader, shine brighter, bonita, mommy meter, line sniffer, never, poetic rhyme writer, chiefer, ebony empress getter, celebrity apprentice, a devil show, big up to Africa, Mexico, Hennessy, margarita, venison eater, so dear, spread them here, don't be acting innocent either, don't me, relax me, it's only to the nasty, I'm just a phony assassin, a lot of niggas owe me, I'ma tax them, a lot of sisters hold me to something holy and Catholic, cause the rosary and gold flashing, just an attachment and accessory, to my dress code, now everywhere, all I see is Pablo, Esco. Last time I checked, I was still breathing, my neck was still freezing. Now everybody got an Escobar season. To every baby on the album cover existing, this trend I was setting, it came to fruition. I'm assisting to push the culture forward. To all my go supporters like a local black owned grocery store. Cause in the hood, shit ain't passed down through blood. It's a dub on that, we get government aid. Spend it at day stores, putting their kids through college. We need balance so we can lease and own deeds in our project, so I'm asking G's to go in their pockets. The racial economic inequality, let's try to solve it.
Yo, what's my up, signature man? Welcome with to the Cold blade. World Podcast. It's been a minute. I've been gone. I was away. Took a break. I missed y'all though, man. I went and it's a few things that's happened since the last time we chatted, so I have to update folks. One, I'm a year older now. Not too happy about that. I did celebrate my birthday, and I think in a decent fashion, though. I went to Paris for about a week. That was amazing. I went to Paris and London and, you know, did a lot of, you know, I saw a lot of sights and stuff. I did a lot of work there. And then it was a lot of stuff happening in education. So I'm going to just go through those two things, man. I think between those two things, I got more than enough material to cover with folks and to bring folks up to snuff on the happenings of Charles and his life. So check it out. I actually originally planned to go to Brazil. Brazil has been the number one destination for me since I was about 12, right? Like, I love Brazil. I've dreamed about going to Brazil. And so when I was finally in a position where I could and I was ordering the tickets, they wanted to create a brand new disease with Zika and all types of stuff and raw sewage in their water and then the Olympics, and it just was it just wouldn't have been a good look. So I could have got the trip for kind of cheap too, man, but it was just so much stuff going on, so I was like bummed out, stressed out about it, sad, because it's like, man, when I could finally go and I got the nerve to do it, I couldn't do it. So I ended up changing the trip to Paris. I'm in a book club. I started one with my friend, and it's for black men. And the first book we read, it was a suggestion that I made, but it was A Fire Next Time by James Baldwin. Baldwin is one of my favorite authors. Not my favorite, but one of my favorites. And then, you know, I got a little bit more into, like, his life and his autobiography and just talked about, you know, what Paris meant to him and what, and then just, you know, Paris just meant a lot to a lot of black people. A lot of black folks, you know, fled this country because black people ain't always got treated so great here and went to Paris. And so it meant a lot to me to actually go and be in a place where folks like Baldwin and Richard Wright and Belafonte and all these folks have just kind of hung out, like Josephine Baker. Like, it's just a lot of black people that have spent some significant time in Paris. So I went, I had an amazing time, man. I did all the touristy stuff. So I went to go see the Eiffel. I went to the Louvre and saw Mona Lisa, which is quite small, by the way. And there's a lot more magnificent things even in that same room. But I did that. Went to Notre Dame and all that stuff. Walked on cobblestone roads where folks was like this happened, this road was built thousands and thousands of years ago. I mean, it was wild, man. It was crazy being in a place, you know, that was around during like Bible times, right? Like that was just, like that was crazy to me. But the majority of my time was spent in cafes, and especially cafes where black folks frequented. So I sat in the seat, yo. I sat in the place where Baldwin sat and wrote his book, Go Tell on the Mountain. And I published an article there and wrote a few chapters to my own book there. It was dope, man. It was amazing. I got treated so well out there. Even with everything going on, even with all the terrorist stuff. I mean, there was actually a terrorist attack while I was there. But it was just amazing. I can see why folks, you know, have moved there. I can see why Ta-Nehisi Coates has moved his family out there, even though I think he's trying to come back. But I can see it. And then one day, you know, I kind of woke up and was like, I think I want to go see another country. And I woke up the day before my birthday. I took the metro to the train station and bought a ticket and went to London and was in London in 2.5 hours. That just bugs me out, yo. Like you gotta think about it, right? Like, I was in a different country with a totally different culture in less than 3 hours. I live in California. To get from the Bay Area to Los Angeles is more than double that time, right? That's within the same state. And I was able to travel between countries, right, in less time than that. It just bugs me out, right? So it was just a few things that I just kind of reflected on while I was there. One was just how young our nation is. Our nation is so young, you know, as a nation, right? Like, I mean, in Philadelphia, you'll go and see probably some of the oldest buildings in the Union. And I know there's an extensive history here in California, from when it was Mexico, from when, you know, natives kind of owned this place and just all of that. But there was nothing like going into cathedrals, these stone cathedrals with like all this priceless artwork and these sculptures. And I mean, it was just wild. It was wild. I that was a true blessing for me. And, you know, I wanted to make sure I took my hood with me. So I posted up, I took a lot of pictures. I took my nice camera and took a lot of pictures and made sure that they just kept getting posted sporadically. So, you know, folks that didn't get a chance to go could actually feel like they was there. So that was cool, man. If I was there longer, I would have definitely went to Amsterdam and Berlin. That's I think I'm planning that for the next trip. I'm thinking about doing that around Christmas time. We'll see, though. We'll see how things shake out. And so Paris was dope, though, man. And so some of the stuff that I wrote, you know, I was working on the book. And I shared one of the little mini chapters with everybody as an article, and it was called If You Escaped What I Escaped. And in this book, which is called Crack Baby Residue, it basically talks about the mindset that I have and how I got there. Like, what is it that goes on in my head? How does coming out of that generation and coming out of the way that I grew up, like, how does that shape the way I move and all that good stuff? And so in each chapter, each little vignette or story is based off of a song, right? So, you know, I was in Paris, so definitely, you know, was thinking about the Niggas in Paris song with Kanye and Jay. And there's a line in there from Jay-Z that says, if you escape what I escape. So that's the name of the article. And it basically just juxtaposes my life now and being able to kick it with pretty much no restrictions in Paris, you know, compared to what I grew up in. And just it just flashes back and forth between the present and the past. And I what I hope for that piece is that some kid that's kind of whose present is very similar to what my past was, I'm hoping that they get to make that connection, that just because you may be in a certain place now does not mean that you have to stay in that place. And, you know, I try to give people a bit of me in those writings and in those articles, I try to be as authentic as possible. I write that stuff and I write that way because even still, I have not come across an author that I feel totally speaks for me, right? Like, I love Baldwin, how beautiful his writing is, but I still can't totally relate to everything that he wrote. And people keep asking me who my favorite author is. I can tell you who my favorite author is, my favorite book, and my favorite chapter in that book, yo. It's that real for me. So my favorite author, book, and chapter would be the one and only Nasir Jones. Nasty Nas is my favorite author. My favorite book is Illmatic. And my favorite chapter would be New York State of Mind. Man, when that album came out and I got a hold of that tape, I don't know how many of those tapes I had. I don't know how many times I popped that tape. But that song, like, I just never heard something like that before. And, but yeah, so I've read a lot of people. I've read some amazing, amazing authors. I've read Richard Wright. I've read Baldwin. I've read Coates. I've read Douglas. Like, I love all these people and reading and hearing from these folks. Love it. Robert Greene is another one. I love Robert Greene, yo. But Nasir Jones, my favorite author, favorite book, and favorite chapter. And you might be saying, bro, that's not a book. That is an album. Check this out. That brother sat down. He wrote that. He wrote it. It resonates. It did something to me. And damn it, that's my favorite, okay? So, thank you, Mr. Jones, for that album and a bunch of other albums that you've given me. Nas and Eminem, my favorite rappers all time. My favorite people to touch microphones. So, I wanted to be thankful for that. And so, I get back, you know, try to get back into the swing of things, but it's hard coming back to your context when you was just in Paris, yo, chilling, right? And you just get a reminder how big the world is and how small you are in it. And, you know, and I want to be able to make an impact and impact folks' lives in a positive way and leave more in the world than what I've taken from it. So I come back and just thinking about the work that I do and if I'm impactful, if it's respected, it may never be lauded, but is it doing what it needs to do? And you know, that could be a different show in and of itself. And then some education stuff started to pop off. So when I got back, the NAACP, which I'm a member of, I gave them my money and have a lot of respect. You know, I critique the NAACP, but I also have a lot of respect for the NAACP and what they've meant to black folks back in the day and what they still are attempting to mean to black folks now. And they called for a moratorium on charter schools. And I thought that was interesting. Now, let me be clear. At this point, there's no policy or anything of that nature. It's just a recommendation that has to go to their national board still. I'm quite familiar with the person that wrote it. And I just think that it's misguided. And here's why. I didn't go to charter schools. I've never taught at a charter school or worked for one. But I respect black folks' right to choose and have a choice. I think that black people tend to be, when you look at who's poor in this country, black and brown people they represent a lot of that from a statistical standpoint. And as a result, a large swath of our young people don't get great educations. And I think some of the limited power that we have is our ability to choose. And in California, that's been made possible, especially in places like Oakland. You got a choice. You don't have to go to the school across the street anymore. You can look at data and put your bid in to go somewhere else. Now, you'll start to hear things about privatization and this and that and the third. and people boycotting, not boycotting, but like picketing outside of these schools and showing up at school board meetings. And listen, man, I respect people's ability to go out and do those things. All those things are legal. Exercise your democratic right. I get that. But I don't see anybody in front of these private schools doing that. I just don't. But so this is how it feels to me. It feels like if you white and got some money, you're going to have choice regardless of what these laws are saying, regardless of people letting you choose between a traditional public school, a charter public school, or a private school. Like, you're going to have that choice. And I just don't like the idea that we want the poorest group of people, the people that have been, that have gotten the short end of the stick educationally for the longest amount of time. I don't like that one of the biggest solutions that y'all have come up with, all you smart people that say you love kids, and I'm sure you do. I don't know. I can't question your heart. I'm not even here for that. That's just not something I'm interested in. I'd rather build than break down. But I'm disheartened that that's the best solution that folks came up with. Now, I know folks are going to say that's not the only solution, that's not this, and it's just catching a lot of attention now. But see, I mean, as somebody who grew up in Oakland and went to some pretty poor schools, like, I now have two nephews whose father made a choice and sent them to a charter school, and he's quite smitten with. And the interesting thing is, we knew what that school was before that school turned around. Like, that's, we used to go up and play basketball at that school. We done seen people get robbed at that place. We used to see a whole bunch of crazy stuff go down at that school. And a lot of folks come out of that school not educated. They tend to be doing a pretty good job now. Like, man, I'm agnostic. I want you to be able to send your child wherever you want to send your child. And then when we look at, I know black people that got some money and that send their kid to private school, and then they ashamed to say they send their kid to private school. What the hell are you ashamed about? You made the decision that you felt was best for your kid. Like, I'm not going to sit up here and judge you. Like, that's just not who I am. Like, everybody trying to get free, man. You know what I mean? Like, everybody is trying to get free. And so, why would I do that? Right? It don't make sense. Not to me. So I wrote an article called Supporting Our Black Parents and Cutting Through Political Slush. And it just basically talks about that. Now, if I don't hate on your ability to make whatever choice you want for your kids on an education tip, I don't think you should do it for other folks. And a lot of people leading these conversations. One, it's a lot of white people who live in the hills, whose kids go to great, great traditional public schools. And I'm not mad at that. That's dope. But I got a problem with that because they come from real different places. That's one. Two, I got a problem with black folks that exercise their right to choice, that are now telling other people that look like them that they don't deserve a choice, or that it's a false choice. It's not a false choice. Like, those are things that bother me. And I've dedicated my life to working in the public sector. I've dedicated my life to working in traditional public schools. I enjoy doing it. It is hard work. It is frustrating work. But I want us to build schools that win your trust. One thing I said in the article was, don't believe none of us. Don't believe reformers. Don't believe anti-reformers. Like, do your research. Take a look at stuff. Walk them hallways. Look in those classrooms. You know what I mean? Like, double check all that stuff. I want you to get free, man. Like, I don't, and I'm not into, you know, Twitter is a battlefield these days, son. Like, it is a battlefield. I'm looking at leaders on both sides of this, and I'm just seeing name calling and hurling and all this stuff, man. It is wild to me. Like, I don't have a temperament for it. This the thing, yo. Like, I'm new to this, man. I've been broke way longer than I've had decent money. So I still revert to, like they're just hood rules that were ingrained in me. And I was never, like, a tough guy. I wasn't the dude running around getting into a bunch of fights. None of that stuff. But these people just feel like they can say and do whatever they want when you don't agree with them. Like, I had to remind somebody on Twitter, like, yesterday. Like, bro, you know we live in the same hood, right? Like, you know we live in the same city. We're going to have to see each other, right? You know what I mean? Like, bro, don't insult me like that. Like, respect means something very different for me. Like, I'm not in this enough to where, like, I understand the rules of you being able to say whatever you want to me, and I just need to take it. I just need to smile, and then I see you, and then we smiling at each other. No. If I disrespected you crazy the way that some of y'all disrespecting each other, I'd expect, listen, I'd be ready for one of y'all to run up on me and try to swing on me. Like, that's how deep this disrespect level is. Like, you can't just say whatever you want to me. I'm not a violent dude. But it just can't happen. You feel me? Like it can't happen. Like, I got nephews out here, yo. Like, this stuff lives on forever. Now, we can disagree. I'll listen to every argument you got. I'll listen to every, like, counter argument you make against what I said. I will read your data. I will present my own data. We can have philosophical conversations. But, bro, when you start to say crazy stuff or make little memes or do whatever, and you getting real disrespectful, I'm just saying, I've seen people punch for less. You understand what I'm saying? And that's not a threat to nobody. I'm not a violent dude. I'm just telling you what I've seen in my life. Like, I'm just trying to tell you. And this is also just not talking points. This is stuff that means a lot to me. Like, this, like, I've worked with people that are no longer here. You feel me? Like friends of mine are dead that got really bad educations that weren't set up to succeed from the gate. And this is before charters or whatever even came, like, into the hood deep like that. Like, I got a problem with the hypocrisy there. Like, yeah, there are some charters out here that are wild and that are whack and ain't doing what they need to do. And there are some that are doing an amazing job. But if you're going to call the charter out for doing whack stuff, then call out the schools that you like that do whack stuff too. So when you say charters push kids out and don't take everybody, I promise you, son, I promise you that our traditional public schools do the same thing. I promise you. On the life of Ozetta Hooper, my grandmother, the person I've loved more than anybody on this earth, the greatest person I've ever had the pleasure and honor of meeting, on the life of her, I promise you that there are traditional public schools that are out here doing the same thing. So if we're going to be outraged at that, we got to be outraged at the other. That's all I'm saying. None of this stuff is perfect. And none of this stuff is serving black and brown kids all that great. But there are some that are doing an amazing job. Traditional public schools and charter public schools. And yes, charters are public schools as well. That's all I'm saying. Now, the place where we disagree is when you only attack in one side. And then the other side, when they do the same thing, you're making excuses for. Like, that's a problem. I live in Oakland, yo. There are a ton of schools in Oakland. A ton. We have so many schools per capita. And it's not just a charter thing. Like, we have school buildings that hold 500 kids that are only educating 150, 160 in them. Like, on a fiscal responsibility level, that is wild. That is crazy. But it's never good politics to close schools, right? Is it never good politics to consolidate schools? Okay, so let's just keep wasting resources in a state that already underfunds our children. That's what I'm, listen, man, I'm going to have to spin off and do an education podcast in addition to the podcast I do. Because I know the folks, thank you, and we close to 150,000 rocking with us. I appreciate each and every one of y'all. Y'all are amazing. If you want to reach out and talk to me directly, you can hit me on Twitter at CColeIII. III, that's at CColeIII. But I want to thank the 150,000 that we getting close to. And but I'm thinking about, you know, having an education focused podcast to go deeper into this stuff and really break it down, man. Like, when I get to look at these numbers all the time, I get to live with these numbers, I get to see them. And people talk about they hate testing and all that stuff. Listen, man, I didn't never like taking none of them tests either. Damn the test. It's not even about the test, but it's about what the test is saying. Now, we can split hairs between test A and test B, or kids getting tested too much and all that stuff. But the bottom line is that if you poor and you black, it's 80% of y'all, more than 80% of y'all, we are not on track. We are not on grade level, both in math and English. I'm sorry, reading, comprehension. That is a problem. What type of workforce are we setting our people up to be a part of? Either they're going to have to be servants to white folks, or they're going to have to get out there and sling that rock, man. And that's not something that I want to see our people doing. They're going to have to do these like jobs that are not traditional jobs. And I think that's fine. I think it's fine if we can be creative. And I want to see more black people in tech, and I want to see more black people, you know, building their own businesses and things of that nature. But when we pushing our babies into a corner, and then one of the tools that we have as far as choice and choosing a type of school and being able to walk away in droves, so maybe the schools improve or do whatever they need to, whatever needs to happen. When we try to take that away, we not setting our babies up to be successful. So I wrote about it. Like I said, man, supporting our black parents and cutting through the political slush. Because, see, that's the thing, man. I'm not running for nothing. I don't care. Like, it's just not what I do. You feel me? Like, that's just not where I am, like, in life. You know what I'm saying? So, I'm not here for that. I am here to make sure, like, we are giving our kids the chance that they need to succeed out here, yo. These streets is unforgiving, man. Two kids got killed in Oakland last night. I don't even think they was 20 yet. Maybe 21. I don't know. They was young, man. They were young. I'm going to Chicago. I'm going to my hometown in a few days. It's bad, y'all. It is bad. So I just don't have the energy or desire to talk about charter versus non-charter. I just don't care. I don't care the delivery system. Yo, I wrote, one of the chapters that I wrote in the book is called Womanopoly, and it praises the black woman, right? And it also talks about my own inadequacies in properly supporting the black woman, and, you know, I'm fair around that, right? But one of the people that I talk about in that piece is Harriet Tubman. And sometimes these arguments feel as if some of these folks that are trying to take choice away, what it feels like to me is like somebody that would have went up to Harriet Tubman and said, hey, man, as opposed to running away from the plantation and leaving this place and going north for freedom and be able to choose the type of life I want, how about we just go back and negotiate with the slave owner? Mr. Bob seems like a nice man when he ain't whipping me and raping my women and putting my boys in the field and teaching my girls how to pour tea. Let's go and negotiate. Just put some more money at that. Now, that's drastic. I get that, that's just what it feels like sometimes. And it's just rough. Man, I read something where somebody was saying basically they were comparing folks that wanted choice for black people, people that didn't hate charter schools, because you got to hate charter schools apparently in this climate. They was comparing them to house Negroes. Word? Nah, not house Negroes. They was comparing them to house niggas. Now listen, I understand that when I look at the people that listen to my podcast, a large percent of y'all are black. So you understand how vitriolic and disrespectful that term is to throw around, right? But for my people that are not black, that may not understand that, let me explain to you how disrespectful that is. And I'm not calling that person out by name. Like, I have conversations with that person, and, you know, that's just not where I'm at today. But that's not important. Let me explain why that's so disrespectful. So in slave times, Texas, people in Texas, slavery was a thing. It wasn't indentured servitude. I know there's some textbooks out there getting changed around and stuff because that's what America does. But in slave times, there were different areas that slaves worked in. But the two main areas was field Negroes and house Negroes. And so house Negroes tend to be fair skinned. They tended to get treated better than the field Negroes. And a lot of times what would happen psychologically is because they got treated a little bit better, there was a superiority complex that would arise. And so what would happen is by happenstance, a lot of house Negroes would help with the overseeing of field Negroes. There were even times where house Negroes would whip field Negroes, okay? And so a group of field Negroes got together and looked like they was whispering and conspiring, and they got together to talk, and it wasn't in a church setting. A lot of times that house Negro would go back and tell master about that, and he would have to go break that up. So to call somebody a house nigga because they want the option to choose for their child, not just say that we need to get rid of public schools and traditional public schools and only rock with charter public schools, not even to say we need to get rid of all that stuff and give poor black people vouchers, but just to say I want a choice in what I do, to make a comparison that person is selling out their entire race to stay in the good graces of the beautiful and wonderful white people in the house, nice old Mr. Bob, is quite troubling for me. It's troubling for me, just as a black man. It makes me uncomfortable, and it makes me uncomfortable that was able to pass with nobody stepping in and saying, you know what, that might be off limits, that we might not want to do that. That's dirty pool. And I don't care which side you kind of fall on. I do believe that there are people on both sides of this argument that actually do care about kids. I do. There are people on my side that would disagree with me, but I do. I think that people are humans, and I think that nobody sees themselves as the bad guy. But where's the line? At what point is enough enough? At what point is what you saying and what you doing considered a war crime to me? Like, how far does it need to go? Like I said, I've seen people get punched and hurt for doing far less. But that's the world that I grew up in. A lot of people didn't grow up in that world. Now, I don't want to see nothing happen to nobody, man. But this is like not a game to me. I know that our kids, especially if you live in Oakland, if you don't graduate from high school, your chances of seeing a jail cell at some point in your life if you are a black man? It's almost guaranteed. I'm not exaggerating. 9 out of 10 in Oakland that don't graduate will see jail bars in some form or another. I don't know if that means that they in there for multiple years and decades or they just there for a few nights. 9 out of 10? And this is what we arguing about. I don't know. Give me your thoughts, man. Leave your thoughts. Leave a message. Like comment. And tweet me at CCOLEII. At CCOLEIII on Twitter. And let me know if you'd be interested in me doing just an education focused podcast in addition to this one. I wouldn't get rid of this one. That kind of goes more into my personal and my life and all that stuff. But let me know. But at any rate, man, thank y'all for listening. I'm happy to be back. Take care of yourselves and each other. And I'll see y'all next time.
Pat them down, count the money, let them see the work. Yeah, that's the definition of a major key alert. Another nigga gotta die, won't be the first. Nah, won't be the last. All we see is cash. Yeah. Your real story don't match what you rapping about. Liar. So keep the movies in, stop acting out. And I ain't talking about no watch or no cars neither. Everything will get copped at a law's leisure. Was a crack monster, I had that hard fever. Switched from the bald head to the dark season. Used to be the capsules, now they love the plastic. Yeah, I ain't trying to get caught up in this thug rap shit. Never. Rather be bumper to bumper in drug traffic. Cash on deck whenever the plug ass kid. You don't sweat the small things, they become drastic. Yeah. Next thing is cremation.